As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.
A quick note before we start today's show. In today's world of college football, things move pretty quick. And yesterday we recorded our show, and after that, the SEC announced a few more games were postponed. We talk about it at the top of today's show, but after we recorded, Texas A&M and Tennessee and Alabama and LSU have been officially postponed. We talk about that as kind of a larger issue, and we also talk about whether or not the Gators can compete with Bama. We run back our Professor Ubben show, and we debate whether or not an SEC school would hire Hugh Freeze. So enjoy the show, and let's get to it. Hello and welcome to the Wednesday edition of Football and Grits, the SEC podcast brought to you by The Athletic. I am your host on a Wednesday, David Ubben. I'm here with Josh Kendall, like we are every Wednesday. Josh, you know, COVID-19 has obviously disrupted a lot, especially in the college football realm, but the SEC has mostly managed to push on. There haven't been any major games canceled. There have been a few cancellations. The breakouts have been on some of the lesser programs. This week feels different. Auburn, Mississippi State's already off. Both have had outbreaks. Texas A&M has paused all its football operations. Its game with Tennessee is now in doubt. I can't say I'd be shocked if that game is rescheduled by the time that you're hearing this podcast. And then, of course, Sam Pittman, Arkansas's head coach, tested positive on Sunday, a few hours after shaking hands with Jeremy Pruitt, hobnobbing on the field post-game. Tennessee said they didn't have any positive tests in their round of testing on Sunday, but it probably wouldn't show up that soon. The Vols have to be at least a little nervous. It feels like it's coming from all corners all of a sudden. What do you make of this situation that the SEC finds itself in, where it had kind of been able to, I don't want to say that it ignores is the word, but it hadn't impacted games in a big way, and this weekend is a little different.
Well, the phrase "not out of the woods yet" feels particularly apt in this situation. You know, for the first half, 60% of the season, the SEC's kind of been walking through a pretty sunny field, and it feels a lot like they're about to walk collectively into a forest that's pretty dark. We've worried, people who are smarter than us have worried for a while, that getting into the fall and the regular flu season, along with COVID-19, could present a problem. And the SEC sitting here at this moment has to be worried that they're on the precipice of a real problem.
Yeah, and I think, too, the whole thing is a little uncomfortable. It has been the whole time. I'm not one of these folks that wants to throw themselves in front of the train and say this can't happen. I think there's decent cases on both sides, but it's still uncomfortable. You know, the NBA was able to reasonably say, you're not going to be infected. You're going to be safe in the bubble. And it was true. It held true for the NBA's bubble. And those guys were getting paid. I don't want to get into a whole existential discussion here, but, you know, unpaid players here in college, you can't in any reasonable way, with any level of certainty, say you can feel good about not feeling likely that you're going to, you know, contract an infection to play college football. players want to play. They do know the risk, but it's still hard to look at and be comfortable with the power dynamics. And now the SEC is kind of confronted with this reality now.
Oh, absolutely. And this was always the squeamish part. You're right. I keep circling back to the summer when the SEC doctors or an SEC doctor spoke to us. Mm-hmm. And what rang in my head then and now was what she said, that we think we're going to be dealing with this potentially for 24-month time range. So we need to plan on what we're going to do. And I think a lot of their initial push through that wall when the Big Ten was postponing, et cetera, was them believing this is not a short-term issue. This is a longer-term issue. And we're not shutting down football for 2 years, so we're not going to shut it down for 1 year. We're going to hold our nose, and we're going to walk into this thing and hope for the best. So far, frankly, they've gotten the best. But again, every step of the way you worry, and as it gets darker and darker here in the woods, you worry a little more and a little more.
Yeah, it's a weird deal. I think it's, this has been it's gone significantly smoother than I suspected that it might. But, this is sort of the reality that you recognize is, I don't even know that possibility is the right word. I think likelihood is a more apt word, and here we are. So, well, let's get into actual football talk here. Again, thanks for subscribing. Thanks for listening to the show. Leave us a review. Give us a 5-star rating. It helps get the word out for the show, helps us, and of course, tell a friend. We've got a full week of content on our podcast network. You can listen to through this show, of course, our Big Ten ACC, and obviously our SEC show, and our Big 12 show, One True Pod, with Max Olson and Jason Kersey, and of course, the Andy Staples show, The Audible. We got a lot for you. You can listen to those free or ad-free inside the app. And if you don't have access to our app or our website, theathletic.com/grits, go do it. You can listen to all of our shows ad-free and, of course, access all of our written content. And we've got some great stuff. We've got some really talented people.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You know, we saw a shift on Saturday, Josh, in the SEC title race. Georgia and Alabama have looked like they were on a crash course. We saw them play once. Now, by way of Florida, really dominating in the cocktail party, it seems like the shift is, you look at Florida's schedule, I don't know how they don't end up in Atlanta. Alabama, we'll see. They've got that tiebreaker over A&M. But Florida-Alabama is your presumed SEC title game. I have zero reason to believe that if Georgia and Alabama played again, it'd be any different. I suspect, especially considering how Georgia's defense and the health issues, it would be even worse. So I'm glad we get a better SEC title game. Florida doesn't have Bama on its schedule, of course, until the SEC championship if they get there. But if you're looking at that game, what is the over-under? What's the line on this one if they play tomorrow? What are you expecting in that ball game?
Well, considering I nailed the Florida-Georgia pick last week, no need to go back and listen to the tape there because I was on that with a big Florida win. I'm a good person to ask, I think, for this. But you're right. I think that the short-term, the longer-term questions have been addressed and will have to be addressed further down the line. Is this a power shift in the SEC East or is this a one-off? But it does make for a more interesting SEC title game because we've kind of seen Georgia versus Alabama. And Florida, at least the Florida that played last week, looks like it can score with Alabama and at least have a puncher's chance. I mean, 90? Is 87 a realistic over-under? I can't see it really being that
I don't know
high.
That Vegas would set it quite that right, high, but I wouldn't be shocked if you saw that number get up there.
Not in the least. I mean, this is still not a great Alabama defense, I don't think. Alabama's going to score a ton. I mean, Alabama could get 50 of the 80 whatever by itself, and I mean, I think Florida's going to get at least 35. So, yeah, I mean, I'm probably taking the over because I don't think Vegas has the stomach to set it high enough for me not to take it.
Is Florida a single-digit underdog in that game, you think?
No. I think it's Bama 11, Bama 10.5 maybe, depending on how everybody looks right going into the week. Maybe it gets bet down to 9.5 or something, but I think it's double digits.
I want to see this game because I think – I don't know what the road is for this Georgia team to beat Alabama. Like I said, I don't know that game plays out any different. But Florida, you know, you win the turnover battle, they're going to be able to score. They're going to be able to move the ball on Alabama. I think Alabama is certainly a more explosive offense, a better offensive line. But I want to see that ball game, and I think we're going to get to see it. I think you're probably right about the line. I'd probably take Florida there. I think Florida can mix it up. And you know, in these big games, Nick Saban tends to have his teams rise to the occasion.
Yeah, give me Nick in the big game. Over
yeah, I just think ultimately, you know, you brought this up earlier today. I think everyone wins because, well, except for Georgia fans, but everyone wins because we may get a really, really great game in the finale, and I don't really want to see Georgia and Alabama play again. I don't particularly have much interest in that.
Is that an 8 o'clock tip, or is that 3:30 this year?
I believe they moved it to a prime time. I think it's,
yeah,
I think
that
it's
game
eight.
Might not that game might not be over until after midnight. We're gonna get a lot of good game too, because that's gonna be a lot of ballers in the air.
Yeah. Well, we got to move to our new Professor Ubbin segment. You got a take for us, Josh?
I do. And this one, you know, this one wraps in the Georgia people and also the teams that are near and dear to near at least to us in Tennessee and South Carolina. So, our veteran listeners, that is the people of my age group, not necessarily yours, will probably be familiar with the Everybody Loves Raymond sitcom. So there's an episode of Everybody Loves Raymond where Marie, the mother-in-law, passes down a recipe to her daughter-in-law, but intentionally leaves out an ingredient, thereby to ruin the final product. And I've decided that that's what Nick Saban has done with all of these assistants. He hasn't downloaded part of the app into them so that they can be successful. Kirby, and frankly, it's the adaptability app, the offense app portion of the thing, because Georgia's offense is not good enough to be elite. Tennessee's offense and South Carolina's offense are just bad. And so, that is my theory. That's why Saban is undefeated and will forevermore remain undefeated against his former assistants, because he's been playing the long game on us the whole time and just filling the conference with guys who look great, but he has programmed a fatal flaw into each of them. Your thoughts?
So here's the deal with this. I think you're probably right about the adaptability, but I think it's... I've said for a long time, if you really crunch the numbers and what the value is, I think it's fair to say that Nick Saban is miraculously somehow underpaid. Is he also underrated? Is very possible. That's hard to believe, but I think it's even true. But here's where I disagree. I'm going to go with a C- on this take. What is the best program that one of his assistants has taken over in terms of the shape that he inherited it? Besides Kirby and Georgia, is it maybe Muschamp? Before, are we counting Muschamp as a Saban disciple? Are we going to count that?
We are counting, yes. If you've gone through Nick's doors, we count you as a Saban disciple because the process is so strong. And Will, to his, you know, has come out repeatedly and said publicly that he models his program after what Nick does. They do it the Nick way. So he's absolutely a Saban disciple.
I think there's something to be said for inheriting not fantastic programs, and that the task of building a program up. You know, I've said,
but every new coach, I mean, almost never does a Ryan Day walk into a fully formed Death Star. You know, that's part of
true. But they've inherited some pretty bad programs. I mean, I think
they have.
You know, look at where Tennessee was at when Jeremy Pruitt got to Knoxville. I think that is an underrated bad situation.
South Carolina was in rough shape when Muschamp took over. There's no question. Mm-hmm. They are better. I think Tennessee probably is better than they were when they took over. But better is different from good. And right now, you got two fan bases who are hot. And Will, you know, Will Muschamp's seat is hot, and I crunched the numbers, and he's got a better SEC and overall winning percentage at South Carolina than Tennessee does, than Pruitt does at the moment at Tennessee. So I don't think Jeremy's seat is as hot, but only because he hadn't been on it as long.
I think the interesting thing, You know, I think the hardest leap to make at a program is that 10 wins to 12 to 13 wins. The second hardest is 1 win to 5 wins. Digging yourself out of a hole is really, really hard because you just don't have any momentum. The easiest is 5 to 8, and then the second, the next easiest is 8 to 10. So if I'm ranking it,
all right,
most difficult 10 to 12 to 13, then 1 to 5, then 8 to 10, and then 5 to 8. It's when you're building a program. And I think when you look at the Saban disciples, they've made some moves in that middle area. We haven't really seen anyone dig anyone out of a gigantic hole, unless I'm forgetting someone. I could be. There's a lot of them. They've all kind of hung in that 5 to 8, that 8 to 10. Kirby's the only one who's been able to get to from that 10 spot to the 12 to 13 and become like an elite program consistently. Why do you think that is?
Well, I think that you're right that, you know, Nick is not overpaid or overrated. It's hard to think he's underpaid or underrated, but he is one of the best, one of the on count on one hand best, if not the very best college football coach of all time. So, you know, honestly and clearly, to hold anybody to that standard is unfair and unrealistic. But I think one of the problems for the 13 other teams in the SEC is that they have decided that they can reproduce mm-hmm. That they can be Alabama, that they can have another Nick, and they just can't. So it's bad enough if you're South Carolina and you're sitting here at 2-4, you're worried about 2-8. That's bad enough. But when you thought, you know, as everybody does kind of in their heart of hearts, that you're getting a Saban guy, and now here we go, it's even worse. And so I think that in the end, you know, Nick Saban's career will be defined by, at Alabama, by a lot of championship rings and what he's done and, you know, the 30, what do we think, the 30 to 35-foot statue they build of him. But at 13 other places, it's going to be defined, unfortunately, I'm afraid, by a lot of money wasted chasing something that they were never going to catch. And I think we may be at the end of that era of the Saban disciple is going to save us era. For one mm-hmm. thing, I think we're at the end of the defensive head coach cycle. And for another thing, I just think there's enough evidence that it's not just add water, create Nick. You know, there are a lot of other things going on. So it worries me that so many schools have had the lack of imagination to think they have to follow this one path, especially when this one path really doesn't have a great success story. Outside of Kirby, maybe, and Georgia is such a kind of an animal of its own, sleeping tiger, sleeping giant, whatever you want to say, that doesn't count fully to me.
You know, Josh, you alluded to it, offensive head coaches in the SEC. It's time to talk about the elephant in the room. Every year, well, I say elephant. Maybe the white whale is a better descriptor.
Every year, I know who you're going to talk about. If it's the guy I'm thinking about, I'm not sure he's as lily white as he once was. But this is the SEC, and we can get him cleaned up and ready for the showroom floor in no time. I bet. Go ahead. Let's see if I'm right.
I think you may be right. Every year, there's a white whale that when things go awry, the fans, his name is the first one that comes up. And this year, it's none other than former Ole Miss coach Hugh Freeze, who is lighting the world afire at Liberty. Beat Virginia Tech this week. Undefeated Flames. We look at the market right now. I think there's probably 4 teams in the SEC that could, in theory, be in the market, or at least eyeing him. Vanderbilt, I don't think it's going to happen, but they may be in the market. Mississippi State, we'll see. Is Mike Leach one and done? TBD. It's not going well, though, for a number of reasons. And then, of course, the 2 programs that we cover, South Carolina and Tennessee. There's a lot of moving pieces here. There's a lot, but I can tell you, especially on Tennessee, Hugh Freeze's name is one that keeps coming up. what do you make of this possible bidding war that could ensue sooner than later?
Well, there's nothing like an old school SEC bidding war for a guy who's got a skeleton or two in his closet. That feels very classic SEC, so that feels comfortable in 2020 when so much is new and unfamiliar. That feels very comfortable, and we can at least be thankful for that, I suppose. You know, I've entered the year thinking that almost nobody would make a coaching change because of the realities of the pandemic, because of the financial realities. You know, the place I'm closest to, they would owe Will Muschamp 13 point something million dollars to not coach at a place where they're going to be $40 to $50 million below their projected budget or what it would normally be. Can you do that financially? Can you do it perception wise? You know, the SEC hasn't really cared much about perception, hence the Hugh Freeze conversation that we're currently having. So you probably can. But you're right. For this, it's no fun talking about, you know, everybody having a level head and realizing that we're in the middle of a pandemic and not making a coaching change just for the fun of it. That's not fun. Let's talk about Hugh Freeze, because that's fun. I'm with you. Vandy, even if they're in the market for a coach, is not in that market. But Mississippi State, Tennessee, and South Carolina certainly could be. South Carolina, as it's constructed right now, the one that I can talk the most intelligently about, with Ray Tanner as the athletic director, I don't believe is going to be in the Hugh Freeze market. However, Ray Tanner is tied very closely to Will Muschamp, just like almost every SEC AD is tied very closely to the fate of their football mm-hmm. coach. And those two people tend to go out together in situations like we have here. So I think if you see South Carolina make a move, or a move made in one form or another, whatever, however it's described, with Ray Tanner in the near to nearest future, then that could be paving the way for South Carolina to be in the Hugh Freeze sweepstakes. If there's no move with Ray Tanner, I don't think they get to step two with Hugh Freeze. But if there's a move, then everybody is going to be, you know, looking in the direction of Lynchburg.
Yeah, I think what it will come down to is, I don't think anybody's going to make a move and explore the coaching market. But I think what you may see is certainly some conversations with places that don't have job openings. And if you feel good about your chances, or maybe have a deal, a handshake deal in place, you make a move and you don't have necessarily a coaching search. You just say thank you for your work, for, you know, the coach that you got, and then you introduce Hugh Freeze very, very quickly, shortly thereafter. Because you're right. I was naive enough to think that in a pandemic, when every athletic department is staring an eight-digit deficit in the face, that they might not make a change, that the security could be higher. And I think the security is, job security for coaches is slightly better, but I also think we underestimated what happens at SEC programs when losses start to pile up. And the problem that you're going to have, or I guess I say problem, the challenge that you'll have, is motivating boosters to pay those buyouts. And nothing would do that more than saying, we've got Hugh Freeze. And that, I think, will be the challenge. I think most of those schools may stand pat, but if Hugh Freeze is not coaching at one of the, I guess, the last three schools that we mentioned in 2021, I'll be surprised.
Yeah, here's sort of the next level PR play from a news dump category. If you can do it quietly enough and you can get it all your ducks in a row and get it lined up, and do your press conferences the afternoon that somebody puts the first vaccine on the market, and you just slide it right in there, and everybody in the nation is celebrating and celebrating, and suddenly, you know, somebody in the SEC turns around and says, what? We hired Hugh Freeze yesterday? Okay, that's fine. I'm happy about the vaccine. I'll worry about that later. So that kind of, I think, is the elite play if you can make that happen. But, you know, we're going to wring hands. Greg Sankey's not going to like it. Greg Sankey's going to make whoever does it, I think, jump through a lot of hoops. But this is the SEC. And if you're going to fire somebody in a pandemic, you're going, you know, that's not a far step from there to hiring Hugh Freeze, because the guy puts good, fun football teams on the field. And mm-hmm. there are several places in the SEC where right now the opposite is true. So I think you're right. I mean, I think Hugh Freeze is an SEC coach in 2022 and maybe in 2021 at the rate we're going at a few places.
You know, it's funny. You know, I think we both agree that the era of defensive head coaches might be changing.
Yeah.
And the funniest part of all of it is this sort of started with Saban disciples and because of Nick Saban. And there's not really a whole lot of offensive Nick Saban disciples, but I think that this shift toward offensive coaches is because Nick Saban has adapted. So the SEC, you know, the more things change, the more they stay the same. And we started the show talking about, started the segment talking about Nick Saban being adaptable, and he is now adapting how the SEC adapts to him. So I've enjoyed talking myself.
The circle always comes back to Nick. It always comes back to Nick. I'd like to be the first. To welcome head coach Freeze and head coach Sarkisian to 2021 or 2022 SEC Media Days, whichever it is. Welcome. We're happy to have you. You heard it here first.
Media Days via Zoom. And you were mentioning earlier, the only question now is which one of our reporters has to stake out the Lynchburg Airport and when. And I think we should just pass that off to our college basketball reporters.
I agree. I don't want to be the guy sitting in the Lynchburg Airport from Thanksgiving until Christmas writing down the tail number of all these little planes that
come
in.
That sounds good.
Nope, no thank you. I'm out. I'm pulling my name out of that hat.
Well, that seems like a good place to stop as the SEC's coaching carousel begins to pick up a little bit of momentum. We'll see. Well, thank you guys for listening. Subscribe to our show. Subscribe to The Athletic. You can do that at theathletic.com/grits. I'll be back again on Thursday with Mitch Light talking about the SEC and games this weekend. There might be a ranking or two. We'll see. You'll have to tune in and find out. Thank you guys for listening. We'll see you again on Thursday.